So I said this last weekend was Memorial Day weekend. That's really the first weekend that I pay a lot of attention to the standings, because you're 2 months in and you start to have a little separation. Hopefully in 2 months we'll be paying attention to the standings. Who knows? You know how we all feel. Now let's get a feel from one of my favorite guys that covers Major League Baseball, that is so kind to this radio station, from Southern California. Let's welcome in from Bleacher Report, Scott Miller. Scott, good to hear you. How are you, sir?
Doing well, hanging in there. I hope the same for you, George.
Yes. So let's before we talk about what's currently going on, and if we're going to have baseball or not, I need you to explain something to our listeners, because it is a great read that if there's going to be a 10-part series, there should be a 10-part series off of your story about Esteban Loaiza. Baseball fans recognize the name. They might be big fans of the White Sox. They know what he did there, even briefly with the Dodgers. But your story about how this guy went from pitching in the majors to essentially blowing through $44 million and ending up in a federal prison. Can you walk us through this fantastic story, by the way, kudos, on Esteban Loaiza, on how he went from where he was to wearing a different looking pinstripes now?
Well, first off, thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. And yeah, it's a crazy, crazy story. And it basically, I started in on it, you know, a couple of years ago. He was arrested down by the Mexican border in San Diego for, you know, for running cocaine across the border. And, you know, he started the All-Star game for the Chicago White Sox in 2003. I basically started looking into this. I'm like, with a very simple question, how in the world, I know it happens, some people's lives just fall apart, but how in the world are you on the top of the baseball world? You know, you play in the majors for 14 years, you start an All-Star game, and then all these years later, you're arrested carrying drugs. So that's kind of where it started. Like, what goes into that? And as I started pulling on some threads and reporting it, it just, you know, turned crazy. I mean, he broke in with the Pirates in the mid-90s, got married to a woman from Pittsburgh, and that marriage coincided roughly time-wise with the Pirates trading him to Texas. Next thing you know, when he's with the Rangers, and around the time he's getting married, he engaged into an affair with his Texas teammate and future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez's nanny. So next thing you know, that's going on, and you know, he's meanwhile pitching in the majors, building his career, and a whole lot of other stuff goes on. And then finally, the Dodgers release him in 2008. He ends up marrying shortly after a very popular singer in Mexico, Mexican-American Jenny Rivera. Has 2 years of just this whirlwind marriage with her, and he's in the music industry. He and her got a star on the Las Vegas Walk of Fame. Next thing you know, they separate amid rumors that he's having an affair with her daughter. And shortly after the separation, after a concert one night, her plane goes down, her private plane in the mountains of Monterrey, Mexico, and kills everybody on board, like 8 people. Somebody close to Loaiza told me, as I write the story, that had they not separated, he would have been on that plane because you know, they were together 24/7 until the big blow up. And so, you know, she goes down, you know, they had separated, and, you know, a few years later, he's popped for, you know, 44 pounds of cocaine in a stash house down by the border. Wow. I mean, just crazy, crazy stuff. And, you know, fascinating, tragic, and instructive in terms of, you know, other ball players. You know, he had his money, $44 million roughly in his career he burned through, you know, and it just excessive stuff with cars and basically taking care of extended family members and his immediate family. And that's where it's instructive too, George, in terms of, you know, like a couple players told me, Jose Silva, his old teammate, he's like, geez, you know, when you come from a poor family and you start making this money, you know, take care of your parents, but you can't take care of everybody. And, you know, you burn through everything. And, yeah, just, like I say, tragic, wild, fascinating, instructive, all of those things.
A little inside baseball so to speak, question. You're an author as well. I mean, you've written a book on baseball and written as well enterprising pieces that you're giving a long runway to write. How long did it take you to put all this together and then to get through the finished product?
Yeah, it's a very good question. This has been about a year in the works, and it wasn't straight through because in my, you know, at Bleacher Report over the past year, I've written many other things. You know, I traveled during the baseball season, covered the All-Star game, the Hall of Fame induction weekend, the postseason, October, I'm on the road the whole month. So basically, I started poking around on what the heck happened to this Esteban Loaiza roughly maybe a year ago, somewhere around there. And then it's kind of been one of those side projects where, you know, I'd be tied up with another story, or I'd be traveling, or I'd be at the ballpark, I'd be doing this, I'd be doing that, and then I'd get a little bit of downtime, I'd have a day at home where I wouldn't be doing anything, I'd make a few phone calls, and then I'd go do something else, and I'd come back to it, make some more phone calls, and, you know, basically, you know, once I found some of the stuff out, I just kind of kept chipping away, and then, you know, I will say one thing with this, this awful situation that we're all stuck in right now, this pandemic with, you know, the shelter at home and all that, and with no sports, you know, finally, after, you know, about a year of reporting it, I don't know, it was last month sometime, I finally, uninterrupted, of course, because I'm at home and there's no baseball going on now, I sat down to write it, and it probably took 2 to 3 weeks to write and then, you know, refine it and go through everything.
Scott Miller from Bleacher Report joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. All right, so the question is probably easy. Is there going to be a season? The answer might not be so easy. But if we are to have an agreement and have a baseball season in 2020, what will have had to happen for this to come to fruition?
Well, the players are going to have to give a little bit because, you know, the owners are saying, you know, it's a bloodbath how much money we're losing, and we want to have a season, but we want the players to help share some of the burden. And you know, you hear after spring training was shut down in March, over the next couple of weeks, the owners and players negotiated various terms, including that the players would get their full service time for this year. And part of those terms, you know, baseball guaranteed X number of dollars salary-wise, and also part of that negotiation was that the players would be paid their salaries on a prorated basis. And at that point, it was like, you know, you play 50% of the schedule, you get 50% of your salary. But that was when the owners hoped and thought whatever part of the schedule could be played would have fans in the stands. And they did put a kind of a clause in that agreement, basically saying, you know, we have the right to come back and revisit this. Well, that's what the owners have done recently because it's clear if there's going to be any kind of season this year, it's not going to be with fans in the stands. So that's why the owners say without that, depending on the team, estimates from the owner side are that each team would lose somewhere between $600,000 and $1 million per home game. Ticket sales, parking, concessions, gift stand sales, all that stuff. So, you know, once they determine that, you know, that, you know, whatever, Kansas City Royals, I'm not sure what they would be losing, but, you know, it's somewhere in that figure. It could be $800,000 per home game times 81 home games. It might be $1 million per home game. It's a lot of money. And so the owners are like, look, if we're paying the players prorated, but 100% of their salary, half a season, half a salary. If we're losing that much per game, we just can't do it. And that's where we're at right now. And the players, of course, say we already negotiated. We're not taking any more pay cuts. So what's going to happen is I think the players are going to have to give a little bit. Probably the owners are going to have to give a little bit. And they're going to have to get creative also. Mm-hmm. You know, and by that, I mean, you hear that the players may counter propose some things today, possibly, or early next week. you know, and it could be there may be some, you know, deferred salaries talked about, for example, like hey, we don't want to take as big a pay cut as you want us to take. What if we agreed on a lesser pay cut but deferred some of the money? Things like that. There's going to have to be some creativity.
Okay. So do you think there'll be baseball in July?
That's a really good question. I know, admittedly, right now it doesn't look good, and negotiations never do. And part of the problem, nobody wants to hear about this. Obviously, people have their own problems. I mean, mm-hmm. people have, you know, lost jobs. It's the worst of unemployment figures are the worst since the Depression. You know, basically, it's like, you know, I don't blame them. I think the general fan is a pox on both of their houses. Just shut up, figure something out, and we don't want to hear about it. And all that's true. I totally side with that. That said, I do think they'll figure something out. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I come at it from this angle. There's so much public pressure to play, but beyond that, there's so much money being lost. Mm-hmm. And I think the incentive is there for the players and owners to come together. If they play some of this season, they at least recoup some of the lost money. It won't be much, and they're still going to be losing money, but they'll recoup some of the money. And I still think, as ugly as it seems right now, that in the end, they're going to figure out making back even a little bit of money is better than making back no money.
So, and I'm with you. I've been optimistic. I can't foresee baseball allowing two sports that are played in the winter to be playing when they should be playing, among the many factors. But let me fast forward, Scott, to the end of 2021, because we're looking at the players' relationship with the owners, and Rob Manfred is sitting on one side. What do you think this does for when that CBA expires? What happens in the next go-around of negotiations to put together, not just, hey, are we going to play this season, but are we going to play for a while under a new collective bargaining agreement? You have any idea what that's going to look like?
Yeah, it's a little early yet. What we do know is there's been increasing anger on the player's side for the last 3 years, basically since the last CBA was done, because free agency's turned. All 30 teams are basically run by analytics-minded front offices now that, you know, are basically telling the players, you know, hey, once you turn 30, we're not going to spend big money on free agent contracts because you're on the downhill side of your career. And, you know, the players are not happy. There's certainly distrust. So, you know, the reason I say it's a little early to say what's going to happen in 2021 is, you know, what's happening right now, I think, is going to play into that. I mean, if things blow up, if it gets really ugly right now, and things blow up and there's no baseball this summer, then I think then it's fasten your seatbelts. They'll come back, they'll play next year, and then it's going to get really ugly again. I think if they can, again, back to that word creativity, if the players and owners can be creative enough to figure out a path forward for this summer, I think that'll help in terms of the working together and you know, the cooperation that it's going to take to get a head start on the next CBA, because mm-hmm. that's what makes this current situation so difficult and so odd. Normally, the time-wise is, when you have a CBA that's going to expire in the near term, the players and owners sit down and start meeting and having their early negotiating meetings, you know, at least a year and a half out, which basically would be right now. So in other words, they should be starting some meetings right now for the CBA that expires after the 2021 season. That's the normal time frame. The fact that they're doing what they're doing now, they're forced into this, having to negotiate this year's deal because of the pandemic, you know, that pushes back the start of talks on this next CBA. And that's why I say whatever happens here, I think, is going to play into what happens after 2021, because they're basically going to have to go right from these negotiating sessions into starting on 2021.
Wow. We'll get Chad here on this, because there's another element, and everything is a trickle down. life and baseball running side by side is we are seeing it started with the A's announcement the other day. Minor league baseball is not going to happen, but now you have a lot of guys who, you know, they're not the guys that are on the cusp of getting into the majors. There's some of those guys that are they're hanging around that the dream is still alive, but they are being released. I mean, over 1,000 players, Scott, by the by the weekend, and it was kind of expected. But then when it's real numbers and real people, and it hits you, you've got great guys like Shin-Soo Choo from the Rangers and David Price who are paying like $1,000 to the minor league players in the Rangers or the Dodgers system. We already know what the reported idea for the future of minor league baseball is like in terms of eliminating teams and how it might be set up. What do you think happens to minor league baseball when we get to see it again and in the future that'll somehow be under the umbrella of a new CBA?
Yeah, that's you're right, because even before this, there was the bickering between the commissioner's office and minor league baseball about consolidating, and you know, baseball is going to cut, what was it, 140 teams or whatever. And those talks seem to have improved lately. But, you know, I think what's going to happen, and it's sad, and especially this year, we're talking about getting Major League Baseball back on the field. It's pretty apparent that we're not going to have minor league baseball anywhere this year. And for all those small towns, you know, small to medium-sized to bigger towns that have minor league baseball, all of it. You know, it's just part of the patchwork of Americana. And, you know, it binds some of these communities, all of these communities together. You know, I mean, for some, you know, low-level minor league teams in some small town, you know, a lot of times that's the big form of entertainment also in the summer is that. And to not have minor league baseball this year, you know, that's just one more layer that makes this upcoming summer, I think, you know, on deck to be one of the toughest summers we've all lived through for many, many, many reasons. In terms of going forward, I think eventually, you know, you're going to see some minor league teams cut. I think, you know, minor league baseball is going to end up having to agree that, okay, we'll sacrifice, I don't think it'll be 140 teams or whatever the number was, but it'll be a you know, a few dozen teams. And things will get consolidated, and, you know, eventually we'll see minor league baseball again, but, you know, not till the summer of 2021 and probably with fewer teams.
Yeah, it's uncharted territory, and hopefully baseball finds a way and they're a beacon of light and we can get back to what we all love to do, and in your case, for a living. Scott, I appreciate it. Be safe where you're at there in California. And again, fantastic job on the story of Esteban Loaiza. I read it all and I thought this should be a 10-part series on ESPN.
Well, I appreciate the nice words, George. Thank you. And you know, yeah, you stay healthy, the listeners. And gosh, hopefully we get through this sooner than later and we can all have a hot dog in a ballpark in the near future.
I appreciate it, Scott. Thank you. George, put it on the poll. Is the host of the Gary Sharp Show more uncomfortable being called George or Greg?
We do kind of sound alike.
Scott probably was last, you know, you talked to him before he went on air. He said, hey, this is George. You're the one communicating with him. I tried to help out there. To the name of the show. That's okay. That's okay. I like Scott. I like Scott.
Oh, my gosh.
First time I've ever been called George.
Really?
Like who? Well, yes. Why would someone just call me George? On air.
Oh,
on air.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Now, who did we have? Because listeners get all the yucks going here. Oh. They call me Greg.
Who partnered with Nebraska?
Oh, Adi.
Yes, Adi. Yeah. Audie.
So, hey, Greg talking to you. I haven't talked to you in a while. Well, that's true. That's very much true. That's on Greg. That's now you're talking again. So, should I be more uncomfortable being called George or Greg?
Man.
And should I correct them? I think that'd be rude.
I thought when you reset there, I was like, oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, maybe just because, you know what? I got a lot on my plate. You know, it's early. I'm, yeah. Zach says, I was so confused when he called... Gary, George. I mean, you guys do look alike at all.
Jeff says, two Georges today. Awesome.
That's fine. It doesn't change my opinion on Scott. Scott's a good guy. Just maybe, I don't know, George, maybe when you reached out to Scott, you said, hey, would you like to come on the George show? I might have to look into this. There may be more to that. It's okay. It's okay. Maybe it's also because Gary is not a, Gary's a name that's getting retired. Yeah. Like, there are fewer Garys these days.
George is also in that conversation, though.
Yeah, that's right, because George is an old man name.
It really is.
Greg is still very popular. All right. Okay. For the record, you and I do have, we have some things, we do look alike. We're both Americans. So there is, with no baseball, and again, we're in the bottom of the fifth. Major League Baseball Network right now, because 25 years ago, Derek Jeter made his debut. They are running 64 straight hours of Derek Jeter. Games, interviews, features. 64 straight hours of Derek Jeter, who was slated to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and they would have had maybe the most people ever in Cooperstown. And that's saying a lot because there have been other classes that have gone in, like especially George Brett, Robin Yount, Nolan Ryan. That was a huge class. But Mr. Yankee, the Cooperstown would have gotten a huge shot in the arm for their economy because all those Yankee fans would have been there. And Derek Jeter is kind of a polarizing guy outside of the Yankee. Well, yeah, even a couple of my Yankee friends, they're not all, you know, Jeter or on the captain. But MLB Network is going to take this guy that in some circles of baseball is beloved. Even still inside of the game, he's beloved. He's now Mr. Miami Marlin. But he was generally respected. Did things a little bit different. The whole gift basket thing was kind of odd. But he is inside of the game, very much respected, by some very much beloved, and of course, the Yankee fan base. And if I'm MLB Network, I'm pulling. All I want is the Yankee fans to watch. You know, the A's fans will watch and they'll be pissed about, you know, the flip. Red Sox fans will be pissed watching because of Jeter going into the stands and moments of the Yankees and the Red Sox. But for baseball, whether you're in on Jeter or not and you want to go through his entire career, which, hey, how good defensively was he? Shortstop, the numbers he put up at the plate, so on and so forth. But he's got a lot of hardware. There is one thing we cannot debate about Jeter. And this is where baseball runs into a little bit of a problem. Is Derek Jeter legitimately is the last celebrity in Major League Baseball. Like celebrity. Not the best player, because the best player in the game is not a celebrity in Mike Trout. Derek Jeter is the last celebrity for baseball. Basketball, football, you don't even have to search. You can say, this guy, that guy, this guy, they're all celebrities in the sport. Like, across the board, not just in their own sport, but across the board, they are a celebrity. In baseball, and it's become so regionalized, that's their problem. They haven't had a guy with the charisma that they promote like they promoted Derek Jeter. So he's the last celebrity of baseball, and if you want some of him, he's on MLB Network for 64 straight hours. Hell, they had, 2 weeks ago when George Brett's birthday, they had a good Friday of a lot of programming. Like, they had a 85 ALCS game against Toronto. They had an interview with George. I wanted more. I don't want 64 hours of Derek Jeter. Unless it has to do with the whole gift basket thing, because I got questions. All right. 2 hours in the book. Brian Christopherson is going to join us at about 12:15. We've got more. 99 days from football. 99 days from football. Knock one down, pass it around. 99 days of football away. Athlon's College Football Magazine will be out next week. The regional cover will feature Wandale Robinson. Wandale Robinson, the best player in the program right now? That's an open-ended question that I'm asking. But he'll be on the cover. And you can see that he'll be one of the young guns that'll be promoted and should be promoted. His personality, his presence, his play. But he'll be on the cover of Athlon. If you told me 2 years ago that Adrian Martinez going into his junior year would not be the cover boy, I'd have been like, what happened? But Wandale Robinson will be on the cover of Athlon when it shows up on your newsstands next week. All right, BC's coming up. We got two more hours to go of this week. Shortened week. Hope you've had a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed our interview with Steve from Bleacher Report on baseball. By the way, thank you all your listeners for making me feel real good about being confused with George and Gary and Greg. I mean, when somebody comes in here and they call me Gordon or something like that, then we're done. We're just shutting off the interview. Oh, I got a bad connection. BC's at 12:15. Plus, Jim Harbaugh. Is he delusional in his comments about where Michigan football is? We'll put it under the microscope. That's all still to come on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.